Welcome back to another episode of Authentically Us. My name is Lene. Thank you for tuning in. Today is Monday, February 7th of the year 2022, and with me I have on a special guest. She goes by the name Victoria. I'd like to introduce you to Victoria.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Victoria.
Hi. We're very excited to be here.
I'm very excited to have you. Thank you for coming on to the show and taking time out of your busy schedule to spend some time on the podcast.
I'm very grateful for the opportunity.
All right. So do you just go by Victoria?
Yes.
Okay. I know that your Instagram name is almost Instant Victoria.
Yes. It's almost.instant.victoria because I transitioned very, very quickly. So I almost became Victoria instantly.
Would you like to share with us a little bit about yourself and your journey?
Yes, of course. So I am 45 years old. I was married for 14 years with my ex for 17. I have two boys, 7 and 10 years old. I've got my undergrad in political science. I've got my master's in childhood education. Currently, I work as a residential appraiser, but I have worked as a teacher, and I've also worked as a welfare caseworker in the past. And I started transitioning about 2.5 years ago.
Nice. So you were a poli-sci major.
Yes.
Okay, that's very nice.
I live in Toronto, Canada. I came out about 2.5 years ago and used the pandemic time very well. I did most of my transition and surgery during the pandemic.
That's really nice. A lot of us, well, just people in general, experience life changes during that time.
Very much so.
Eye-opening experience for a lot of us.
I always joke that I went into the pandemic as a boy and came out as a girl.
Yeah. That's funny. Not many people can say that, probably.
No, that's a really strange side effect.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. All right. So, was there a pivotal time in your life that changed the whole trajectory? And it sounds like you mentioned some of that already, but was there a specific point in your life that stands out for you?
My first experience was when I was around 8 years old. And so I always knew I was different from a very young age. But it was definitely pushed down because I grew up in an Eastern European house, and being anything but a typical normal boy was utterly unacceptable. So it kind of went into the, it went away for a long time. Not that it went away, but I kind of kept it hidden. But for 20 years or more, I considered myself a crossdresser because I rounded myself down to a crossdresser, even though I knew that wasn't what I was. But my ex knew about it. It was just something that we just didn't talk about. When Bruce Jenner came out and said that he was trans and that he was going to become Caitlyn Jenner, I think that was really the most pivotal moment, because that was the first time I had seen somebody who was kind of like me, married to a woman, had kids, was athletic, was very masculine. And that was the first time I'd seen somebody who was kind of a mirror of myself. Obviously, I'm not an Olympian, but nonetheless, it definitely felt very reminiscent of what my experience was like. And when he came out, when she came out, it really kind of awakened something in me. And I almost made that realization, maybe not right then and there, but it started the wheels turning.
Yes, yes. I can definitely relate to that too.
It was a very tumultuous time in my life as well. I was finding myself becoming more and more depressed, and the title that I gave myself of being a crossdresser, I think I was starting to find more and more that it wasn't actually fitting. And so I was really searching for something. I was doing internet searches daily for sometimes hours on end, just looking for answers. And it was really that moment, I guess, that really kind of started, I guess, an answer for me.
Yes, yes. Did you read her book, The Secrets of My Life?
I have not. I have not. You know what? I think I'd seen enough of her political views and her media exposure afterwards that kind of really turned me off of some of the things that she stood for. And yes. And it just really, it was really just a starting point for me personally. It's not that I really admired her so much. It was more that she just really started the discussion inside my head.
Right. Well, I read the book back in 2017. A few months after that, in 2018, I started my transition. And I started medically transitioning in August of 2018. So yeah, it'll be 4 years coming up for me this
summer.
So
you're about 11 months ahead of me.
I think so. You were, you said 2020, right?
So I started taking hormones officially in April or May of 2019.
Yes.
And then I stopped for about a week. My family and I went to Myrtle Beach. I dumped all the pills down the toilet, which was really stupid. But, and the whole time we were in Myrtle Beach, I felt so stupid for dumping them down. It was just this fear. And as soon as I got back to Toronto, I went straight back to my doctor and I had explained the story to him. And he said how that was an extremely common experience, that people have almost a panic because they realize how monumental of a change is really coming for you.
Right. Yeah. Are medications easily obtainable in Canada?
It really depends. I live in Toronto, which is the largest city in Canada.
Right.
Also very progressive.
Yeah.
I the story is quite interesting, but I was cross-dressing. I was fully dressed in female women's clothing. I'm very androgynous on my way to go take a picture of a condo. I knew the condo was empty. It was a new sale. And, I was driving down the highway. It's a very windy highway. And I started thinking about driving off the side of the road. I felt that this was the end. There was no answer. I couldn't do the transition. And I'd already done all the research. And I actually, instead of driving to the condo, instead of that, I drove to a medical clinic that I'd already done all the research on. And it was a clinic that was very well known for working with trans patients.
Yes.
I walked up to the clinic and very, very, I was so flustered. And I walked up to the receptionist and I said, and she looked at me, she could tell I was very distraught. And she said, can I help you? I said, can you give me hormones? And
straight to the point.
Exactly. And obviously she couldn't give me hormones, but she referred me to a phone number that I could call to set up an appointment. A couple of steps away from that, they actually referred me to a fantastic doctor that is just a general practitioner, but he specializes in HIV and trans patients. So I was very fortunate that he had just started his practice, and they referred me to him, and I got on with him. And probably from the first time I met him till I started hormones was probably 3 or 4 months, probably, give or take.
Yes.
It required a couple of meetings. It required some blood work, but they do what was called informed consent.
Right.
Which they didn't, I didn't have to have a psychological test. I was an adult. I was 42 years old. I wasn't it was very clear in terms of it wasn't a mental illness. It was finally, for the first time in my life, it was actually a time when everything was actually clear and everything finally made sense.
Yes. I was living in Colorado at the time, and Colorado, they have very good laws for trans people that are favorable to the trans community. So I also did an informed consent. I didn't have to get a letter from a therapist or from a medical professional to prove that I was in fact transgender.
We are very lucky as a result of that.
I was. Now I'm living in Florida for a little while with my parents, and things are a little different here, but so far I haven't run into any problems.
My parents are in Fort Lauderdale, actually. They spend half the year there.
Okay, nice. Nice, okay. You know, I've been to Toronto before.
Toronto is a really great city for people in the LGBTQ community. I've lived here my entire life, except for a year that I lived in Korea. But I was born in Toronto, and I have not had a single negative experience. Even at the beginning, when you know you're going through your very awkward stage when you're first transitioning, it's a really difficult stage at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Still very difficult to pass. It's very difficult to really, you're still learning all these new skills, and you really haven't mastered any of them. Even in that awkward phase, and I'm rather tall. I'm 6'2", and mm-hmm. much more muscular than the average person, as I've worked out almost my entire life. But
yeah,
so
you have great abs, by the way.
Yes.
What's your secret?
If you don't mind sharing. Yes, of course. Well, I spend about 3 hours at the gym every day, and sometimes I will go twice. So that's probably my first secret. Second mm-hmm. secret, I would say, in terms of diet, is I actually just the way it works out is that I consume most of my calories early in the day.
Right.
And then mid-afternoon, I lose my appetite. So usually, you know, after 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I don't eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
So then okay. It's almost like 12 or 14 or 16 hours before I eat again. So it's almost like fasting, but I don't actually do it intentionally. It just kind of works out that way.
Right. And you continuously drink water throughout the evening?
Of course.
Yes. Very important.
Very important.
What brought you to Korea? Did you go as a kid with your family, or was
no.
that something that you
so,
did as an adult?
So I, once I finished my master's, I have my master's in childhood education. So I was a teacher, and once I graduated, my wife at the time, she quit her job and we moved to Korea. We lived in Seoul for a year and we taught in the public school system as English teachers. We used it as a chance to travel all over Asia. Korea is a fantastic place. It's so, so amazing. It's so advanced. It's clean. It's well taken care of. People are friendly. Cost of living is much lower. We got to go out all the time. We explored. We climbed mountains. We traveled all over Asia. It was a great experience. I went to China, Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore, Beijing, Bali. So it was, and that was all funded by the work that we did while we were there.
Yes. How long were you there?
We were there for only a year, plus a couple of weeks before and a couple of weeks after, because we did most of our traveling during the time we were there.
Yes.
When school was off. So it was a fantastic experience. It really did open my eyes to how other parts of the world really live. It was really fantastic.
Nice. I've never been to Asia before. I've been to Europe several times, and we lived in Iceland when I was a little kid. My first memories are of living there. My dad was in
amazing.
The Navy. Yeah,
that's one of the top places I would like to go. I think it's like top three of places I would want to go visit.
Yeah, I would love to go back as an adult because I was 4 years old when I left. I remember some things about it, but I know that I would have a different experience if I were to go back as an adult.
Definitely. They speak English there?
They speak Icelandic.
Oh, okay.
Actually. On the military base, pretty much everyone speaks English. I think off base as well, but I was really young when we lived there. So, you know, I didn't really know the difference, but.
That's true.
I do remember the long days in the summer and the Icelandic food, the holiday traditions.
Yes.
You know, things like that.
Yes, definitely.
All right. So make sure you're following us on Instagram at Authentically Us Podcast. On Twitter, we are Authentically You Too. You can email us at authenticallyuspodcast@gmail.com. My personal Instagram page is Lene8199, and my YouTube channel is Lene Marie. And also, I am running a GoFundMe campaign now to help me raise money for electrolysis, so if you'd like to support me in that, please reach out to me on Instagram, or you can find me on Venmo. I am at Lene8199 on Venmo. Or if you just like to support the show or let me know what you think of the show or if you have different ideas for the show, please reach out to us. We would greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
This is really cool that you can do this, actually. This is such a useful, fantastic way for you to, you know, make your mark.
Yeah, I'm trying. Little by little, I'm growing organically, which is the hardest way to grow, but
that's what I did too. I haven't done any of the other things that people do to grow their Instagram of kind of just telling my story and writing my posts and hoping that people will find me.
Yeah. When did you start doing Instagram?
About a year and a half ago.
Gee, and it just grew by leaps and bounds.
Yes. It's been quite an interesting ride. Usually it's about 7,000 a month I grow.
Oh, really? By that many subscribers?
Give or take. Yeah, I actually, when I look at my statistics, like the numbers are like about 400 a day ad, but I lose about 150 a day as well.
So. Oh, you do? You say something to tick someone off or something?
I guess so. I don't really care. I'm not really too worried about it. I'm just
you can't please everyone.
I'm doing me, and if people like me, great. If not, so be it.
So be it. That's right.
I'm not going to please everyone. I don't want to please everyone. All I want to do is be myself. And
well, can I let you in on a secret?
Yes.
You'll never please everyone.
That's exactly right. It's impossible.
It's impossible. So why even try, right?
Exactly.
I always try to be respectful and courteous to other people, of course.
Of course.
But,
of course.
Yeah. But people will always, you know, find some type of fault with you.
Exactly. You're never going to please everyone. So if you're not going to please everyone, you might as well live your life as authentically as you possibly can. And things will work themselves out if you do that.
Hence the name Authentically Us.
Exactly. It's a really great name.
Yeah, I'm trying to do something positive too. You know, I can get on the internet and do all kinds of bad things or give too much of myself, but that's just not my style.
Yeah, you have to find something that works for you.
Absolutely.
That you feel comfortable with and that is your calling. And then if it's yours and you're most comfortable in it, then that's what's going to speak to others as well, because there's going to be somebody who that works for, and those are the people you want to reach.
Right. I did an episode about a year and a half ago called The Classy Lady versus the Bad Bee. Right now, at this point in time, or even, you know, a decade or so before, I guess our culture kind of became too relaxed, and it's just basically anything goes. Being tactful and having class has gone out the window in a lot of ways. Just my opinion. I know it may sound prudish.
The world opening up and kind of changing the way it has, there's been some really great components to it.
Absolutely.
And there's also been some really hard things. Like I remember when I was growing up, you know, high school or grade school, there was the nerds and the jocks and there was these groups and these cliques. And
cliques, yeah.
And if you weren't in one, you were an outcast. So you had to fit in somewhere. And right. They were so regimented, and there was the acceptance of differences was not accepted. You know, and now I find that, you know, like it's cool to be a nerd. It's cool to be smart. When I was growing up, being smart was seen as almost like a negative. If you were good at school or if you were a smart person, it was seen as almost like a way of being uncool, which is so ridiculous. It should be, being smart should always be a good thing.
I agree. You should never have to dumb yourself down to be accepted by others.
I was just thinking that, you know, these days, like my 7-year-old, when I told him I was trans, he already knew everything about it. There was already a trans, there was a little girl who was gender nonconforming in his class. And the teacher had already talked about transgender. And so he was already well-versed. I didn't need to explain the term. He had already heard it before. And so for him, it was already a beginning of, you know, acceptance, which was really great.
Yes, the younger generation, I guess they're exposed to more things than we're exposed to. And some of the things that weren't normalized when we were coming up, you're a few years older than I am, but we grew up around the same time. Those things have been normalized to the younger generation. So they're more open to alternative lifestyles than, say, someone from an older generation would be.
That's right. And my parents were even more so than we are. And yes. So I feel that society is definitely in some ways moving in the right direction in terms of acceptance and of acceptance of differences. I really feel that, you know, people are much more understanding and empathetic to the differences that people exhibit.
I agree. Trying to run a family show or produce a family show, some people kind of read that wrong. They think I'm just, oh, you must be this way because you think this way. And that's not the case at all. But enough about me. Let's talk about you. You're the guest. All right, so...
I like this discussion, though. I love banter. I love having a discourse.
Is this your first podcast, or have you been on...
It is my first podcast. I've done one interview, but it was a written interview with the Heroines Blogspot. But this is my first podcast, so that's why I think I'm a little bit extra nervous.
Oh, no, you don't have to be nervous. Not at all. Well, maybe this next question might make you a little nervous.
Okay,
I'm kidding. All right, so can you tell us about a time when you had no idea what you were doing, and how did things turn out?
I think the obvious answer is when I started transitioning. I had lived my life so closed off pre-transition. I had never even met a gay person. I wouldn't even drive through the gay village in Toronto. I was so terrified of that. I almost felt like I would be spotted in my car. And so I lived in the suburbs. I was married. I went to church every Sunday. It was a very typical heterosexual cis and very sheltered life. Mm-hmm. So when I came out, it just the recognition of this, of just me recognizing that I was actually trans, even saying it, the first time I ever said it was to this doctor, and I had no idea what I was really in for. I had no idea what this was going to look like. All I knew was that I lived my life as a lie, even if it was an unknown lie, for over 40 years. And so I was being thrown into this world where I didn't know anything. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know how things were going to turn out. To be honest with you, I assumed that it was going to end terribly. But I don't think it mattered. At the time, all I wanted to do when I first came out was just to, for one second, for one day, for one month, one year, just to live authentically and live as myself. And I had lived as this almost robot for, you know, over 40 years. And so when you realize who you are and to be this authentic person, it's mind-blowing, but it's also terrifying because I had no idea what to expect. In terms of how it turned out, I mean, I'm still in process. I only really started transitioning. Technically, I started transitioning about 2.5 years ago. I started hormones in July 11th of 2019. I actually have a little tattoo on my wrist and it says, live your truth. Mm-hmm. And underneath it, that it says July 11th, 2019, which is the day that I started hormones. And in terms of how it turned out, it's turned out 1,000 times better than I could have ever imagined. I remember speaking to the doctor on my second or third visit, and I said, all I want is to be able to walk down the street and not be beat up and not be harassed. I know I'm going to be alone for the rest of my life. And I had visions.
Don't say that.
I had all these visions that I was going to be alone and I was going to lose all my friends and I was going to lose every single person that I'd ever cared about. And it didn't work out that way at all. I didn't lose a single friend. I have a great relationship with my children, actually much better than I did pre-transition. I'm a much better person. I'm a happier person.
That's wonderful.
I kept my job. I have a pretty good relationship with my parents. I even reconciled with my sister. So I was almost estranged from my sister pre-transition. And now we get along great. So my life is 1,000 times better than I could have ever in a million years envisioned when I started transitioning.
How did you overcome not exactly knowing how things would turn out?
That's a great question. I feel that I didn't need to know the answer. All I needed to know was the direction. I didn't know that things would turn out well. I didn't know if they would turn out terribly. I knew that I was going to walk in this direction, even if it was totally pitch black. I knew I was going in the right direction. I could feel it. For the first time in my life, I was actually living authentically, and I was actually listening to myself. I had opened up my heart and I opened up my mind to the possibilities of actually, for once in my life, being who I really was. And for such a long time, that had stayed hidden and closed behind, 10 doors with padlocked doors. And mm-hmm. I opened those doors and all I knew was how to walk through those doors. I didn't know what was on the other side of those doors. I just knew that I had to walk through them. So the direction was the only thing that kept me focused. So I knew the goal. I didn't know how it was going to get there. I didn't know what it was going to look like when I got there, but I knew that it was going to be, it had to be better than where I was.
Yes. Kudos to you for choosing to live authentically.
Yes, it at some point I've been told often how I'm so brave and all these things. And for me, I never felt brave. I felt at some point that my choice was ending myself or choosing to live. I chose to live. I chose to finally accept who I was. And that was a really extraordinarily difficult thing for me to do. But once I realized what that was, it was exciting. It was euphoric. It was like a cloud got lifted off me, and I couldn't help but strive for this dream of actually being who I actually was.
Yes. Is there one thing that you wish you would have known prior to starting your transition? Or several?
there's a lot. But I would say probably the most important thing to do is to pack suitcases and suitcases of patience. It really is something that does not happen overnight. It requires patience and focus. When I had started my transition, I'd made myself a deal. I made myself a deal with myself. And I kind of said, every day I was going to do something that was going to progress me, even if that meant just practicing my voice or practicing makeup or watching a YouTube video or reading about GRS or whatever it was going to be something that was going to take me that one small step in the direction that I wanted to go. And eventually, millions upon millions of small steps leads to a really big step. So it was right. Something that I told myself, you have to do something, even if it's infinitesimally small, but something that's going to put you in the right direction.
Right. Transitioning is definitely a marathon. It's not a sprint, not by any means.
And also, I feel if I was told at the beginning that it's very, very difficult at the beginning, but it does get better, that it gets better project, for example, that's, you know, something that I think is so important for LGBTQIA youth, that they realize that as hard as it is, it gets better. You grow up, you get to make your own decisions. And right.
And you get better.
And you get better. You get better at it. I practiced a million things all the time. And eventually I figured out how to do like my eyeliner, even though I poked myself in the eye a couple of hundred times.
Wow. Well, congratulations to you, because I still struggle with that. I still need to work on, you know, doing my makeup.
It's something that definitely requires a lot of work. Not that I'm an expert by any means, but it's always a work in progress.
Do you wear makeup less now since the pandemic, or about the same? Because here in America, and I'm sure in Canada too, there was a mask mandate for a long period of time.
Yes.
There were days when I just said, okay, I do not feel like dealing with makeup now, and I'm going to cover my face for most of the day, so why even bother?
For sure.
While still looking presentable.
Yes, of course. On an average day, I generally don't wear makeup. If I'm going out somewhere, I always do. Somewhere, you know, if I'm going out for dinner, if I'm going out with friends, I always will. I really don't use foundation or any of the really complicated makeup techniques. I usually just do my eyes, which is just eyeliner and mascara. I feel like that's kind of like a minimum acceptable. Also, I feel as I've gotten more comfortable with who I am, I'm finding myself using makeup a little bit less, because at the beginning, I feel some of it was just a protection for myself.
Right.
And over time, as I got more comfortable with who I am and I started filling the shoes that I wanted to fill, I kind of, that internal confidence grows. And then once you have it, you really don't, you know, it's almost like the best makeup you can wear is confidence. And when you're wearing it, people don't question you the same way. And now when I walk into a room, I don't worry so much, am I passing, am I this, am I that? I just walk into the room, and usually I'm tall and I'm big and I'm loud and I'm an extrovert, so people stare at me no matter what I do, so I'm kind of just used to it at this point.
Yeah, well, that's good. Do you notice a difference between dating as a trans woman?
Well, okay, so...
If you've dated since your transition.
I have dated quite a bit. It is... And also, this is also during the pandemic, so I can't really speak to what it would be like outside of the pandemic, because we're still really kind of in it. Our clubs and bars and really everything is still kind of closed here. So I've done a little bit of online dating. Yes, our bars, like our clubs aren't open right now, and our restaurants are open, but only at 50%. So... Everything is still kind of in a quasi pandemic mode, but nonetheless, dating, again, I was with the same woman for 17 years, so there was no dating for a very long time.
But
exactly. So, and pre-transition, I was a very alpha male type of personality. I was.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, like I had a six
like a Donald Trump.
No, nothing like Donald Trump. Definitely not.
Or maybe a Joe Biden.
No, I was like a workout gym guy who, you know, spent lots of time with his friends, with his bros. And
okay, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, yeah.
Or Dwayne Johnson, The Rock.
Yes, let's go with Dwayne Johnson. So I was very confident and I was very comfortable in that life. I was very good at pretending to be a guy because I had learned how to mimic the guys very well. Actually, I learned so well how to mimic them that I kind of became the ideal in some ways. No one ever questioned me because I had studied men so well that I knew exactly how to act. Wow, I knew exactly what to say. I knew exact. At the same time, while I was doing that, I was watching the women. I knew their style. I knew how they walked. I knew how to do everything. I had really good fashion sense. I knew how to put together an outfit, like a woman's outfit, the second that I started transitioning, because I would go out with my wife and we would go shopping and she would ask me my opinion on clothes and I kind of helped her dress. So I always kind of had that kind of way of really looking at analyzing people. And it definitely helped me in terms of transitioning and also as protecting myself pre-transition.
I wasn't your typical guy. And, you know, I was raised around girls my whole life.
That seems to be two different veins in that way for trans people. The ones where, you know, the guy is a hunter, army guy,
guy who fights. My dad was Navy.
Yeah, someone who fights and who's like hyper masculine. And then there's the other vein where they just can't really do it. And
yeah, that's why I didn't make it in the military. I was in the Air Force, but I was medically discharged for asthma. A lot of the guys there thought I was gay, but, you know, I was never a gay male.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that seems to be a very common, like, you know, it's almost like it splits in two for trans women. Hmm. You know, you're either very effeminate or you're hyper-masculine.
Yeah, and I don't think I was that effeminate. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but anyway,
it's hard to say one way or the other. I always thought I was hypermasculine, but even then, I probably wasn't.
Maybe not. So, what was your biggest failure, and what did you learn from it?
I lost time with my kids, as I lost my wife, and that has probably, in some ways, been a difficult time for me. In some ways, that's probably the hardest piece for me personally in terms of transitioning. How I've overcome that and how I feel that what I've learned is the time that I have with them, I really use it so well. I get lots of hugs and I get lots of kisses and I use my time with them as well as I can. And I really cherish the time that I have with them. It's something that, you know, when I don't have them, I just feel this emptiness. And when I do, I cherish every second I can.
Yes. And it sounds like you get a good feeling whenever you can spend that time with them.
I do. So I try to always find, as much as my life is hectic and, you know, I've got work and I don't live all that close to them. I'm about half an hour or 40 minutes away, which is not too bad. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they have their school and they have their lives and, I try to see them as often as possible, but I still have them every other weekend. Plus, I see them a couple of times during the week as well.
Okay, that's great. Slightly going off topic here. What's the temperature in Toronto?
Right now, it's just below freezing.
Okay.
There is a ton of snow on the ground.
Wow.
And so it's, you know, there's probably like 2 or 3 feet of snow that's not on the roads right now because it snowed a couple of days ago and they've cleared it. But yes. It's the winters here are atrocious. Brutal. They are really, really atrocious. And I hate the cold. So I can't stand it. I'm cold all the time. My apartment is, I'm not sure what it is in Fahrenheit, but it's probably around 86, 87.
Wow, you keep your apartment that hot?
Yeah, and I sleep under a big duvet, and I'm not by any means hot. So I think, and that definitely is a change since transitioning. I used to be like a hyper sweating type of person. And now I can go on the treadmill for 2 hours and I don't even break a sweat. So,
wow. So you're no longer hot blooded.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. So you get the lake effect snow there in Toronto, right?
Yeah. Toronto's got some pretty cold weather. I don't know why I don't live in Hawaii personally, but that's something I can hopefully, oh, Florida. Exactly. Yeah.
It's 48 where I am right now in northern Florida.
Yeah, so it's definitely above freezing, which is nice.
Okay, nice. I had to ask that.
Yeah, no worries.
I've been to Montreal several times, which is my favorite city in Canada.
I love Montreal. Montreal's my favorite city in Canada, too.
It's very European, and I like that. I went to college up in Boston, so I would take trips up there sometimes.
Yeah, Boston is a really nice city itself. But I love Montreal. Montreal is I would go there often. Actually, that's where I had my bottom surgery.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Do you speak French?
I speak very minimal, but that's actually where they do all these bottom surgery in all of Canada. There's a few places that do it in Toronto, but the wait list in Toronto is much larger. The biggest clinic in Canada is actually in Montreal. Dr. Broussard did mine, and they actually have the care there was just so phenomenal. I was there for 8 days. I was in hospital for 8 days.
Yes.
And it was just, they have like a kind of like a hospice care that's connected to the hospital. So the nurses are there, they're teaching you how to do all the stuff with your neo vagina and make sure that it's taken care of properly. So it was a really fantastic place. I can't say enough good things about it.
Nice. And for those out there who may not know, not all trans women choose to get bottom surgery or want to have bottom surgery.
Yes, definitely. It has nothing to do with being trans. It's really something that I chose, that I wanted for myself, but I think that it's totally an optional thing and it doesn't take away any of your validity.
Right. What advice would you give to someone who is starting or trying to decide whether or not to transition?
Whether someone deciding whether or not to transition, it's really a very personal choice. You don't know what somebody's circumstances are. You don't know what their health is like. You don't know where they live. All of these factors definitely can play a deciding role. You know, for example, if I lived in a place where being gay was punishable by death, I would definitely have to really consider my options or consider moving before I did something like that. But if it was Iran or if it was another country where, you know, they recently, I think I heard that they just killed two gay men in Iran. Like that kind of thing, it makes me so incredibly sad for, you know, that I just happened to be lucky enough to be born in Canada. And so for that reason alone, I feel so blessed. But outside of that, to answer your question, I don't think I was ever 100% sure. I knew that it was the right thing. I was also socialized as a boy, and it's so difficult to separate your actual feelings from what society is telling you and the binary, and you're being told, well, you're a boy, you have to do this. And I knew it never felt right for me, regardless of how well I was able to mimic the boys. I knew it wasn't really I was never really comfortable with it. And I knew it wasn't the right thing. And for me personally, I kind of had to hit bottom. I had a really great life pre-transition. I was married to a beautiful woman. I had two kids. I had a house with a pool, and I had supportive family, and I had great friends and a great job. And so I felt like I had this fantastic life. It just wasn't my fantastic life. And so when I transitioned, I was going to lose. I imagined that I would lose every single one of those things. Of course, it didn't work out that way, but nonetheless, those were major considerations. And for me, I felt like I almost had to kind of hit bottom, where my choice was either transition or die. And so that part of it, I would hope that no one would go to that degree. And I feel society has kind of made big strides in terms of that, in terms of making the realization that you're trans or that you're, you know, you're gender nonconforming. I feel that if you're going to transition, it's something that even if you're not 100% sure of, do your research, spend some time really looking at everything, speak to a therapist. Sometimes it just is something that you need to kind of think about a lot and stew, because it is very, it is a very challenging experience, a challenging part of life. But it is, I find, for as hard as it was, the rewards are so, so much greater than I would have ever imagined.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful. And for those who may not have access to a therapist, support groups are good, or finding a community or someone on YouTube or on social media even to reach out to who can provide guidance along the way.
Yes, I did that as well for myself. I spent lots of time on Reddit and on YouTube and on Instagram. I found lots of people who had successfully transitioned, and ones that were kind of similar to me. They weren't, you know, 15, or they weren't like, you know, like Jazz Jennings. Like, you know, she had a supportive family and she knew when she was 4, and she, that's a dream, but that wasn't my reality. So when I found people that were more similar to me, and I had seen their lives they had really successful transitions, it kind of opened the door that I started to see that maybe there was a glimmer of hope that I could also have that.
Yes. So what are some great resources that helped you along the way? What have you read, watched, or listened to recently that has inspired you?
That's interesting. I when I started out, I was on Reddit a lot. It's a great resource. It was a great resource definitely for a newbie, a baby trans. I learned a lot in that time. I'd seen lots of people who had posted their transition stories, and they had shared so much information, so much about themselves. As time went on, I did lots of Google searches. I watched tons of YouTube videos on different surgeries and different transitions and people's blogs. Now, though, in recent memory, because I've now been transitioning for a while, I feel that I've kind of got a reasonably good grasp of that. Now I'm finding myself really inspired by the younger generation. The kids who are, you know, that when I was their age, I was so utterly clueless, and they are so knowledgeable and they're so inspiring to me. They're amazing. They're doing things that I could never have imagined doing at their age. And I just find that so fantastic. It makes my heart, it warms my heart to see somebody so young and so with it and just going for it, and having that support from family or from friends, and just even if they don't, you know, they still go for it. And I'm inspired by their bravery.
I am too. Absolutely. Are there people out there who have been influential to you, like a mentor, a therapist, family, or someone within the LGBTQ community?
Yes, very much so. Before I transitioned, I stayed away from anything that was in the LGBTQ community. I stayed as far away as possible because it was terrifying to me. Because I felt that as soon as I touched it, I would just realize this. And it was kind of like purposefully staying away, because I subconsciously, I knew that this was me as well. But regardless, as I was getting older, I think I was around, you know, 39, 40 years old, and I had done so much research on the internet. I'd done all these things, but I'd also kind of realized that, hey, I'm too old to transition. There's no way I'm going to have a successful transition. I'm a 40-year-old, 6'2", muscular Serbian man. How is this possibly going to end up as a positive? I was researching and researching, and everyone I had seen was young and pretty and all these things. And I happened on two people, one on Reddit and one on, I just found her page on just on a Google search. It was Made in Ariana, and she actually has an Instagram page, and Suddenly Samantha.
I've heard of Suddenly Samantha. I think
These are two.
I follow her on Instagram.
These are two beautiful, successful, you know, women who are, their transitions are amazing. And the Made in Ariana's page, I had gone through her page and I had clicked every single picture. I had read every single word that she had written down. It was the first person that I looked at and I said, if I could be 10% as pretty as her, I will be so over the moon ecstatic. If I can just a tiny fraction of her success, it's good enough. I'll be okay. I'll be ecstatic with 10% of what she has.
Mm-hmm. Do you know her?
I don't. I've never met her. I've never spoken to her. I've texted her on Instagram. We've shared a couple of DMs. I've kind of just told her. I told her that story, and I said thank you for being who you are and for, you know, putting yourself out there, because it was a monumental moment in my life where I was considering whether I was going to commit suicide or if I was going to live this life. I felt like in some ways it was never going to be the option of not living it, but at the same time, it was so terrifying. This finally had to have this one person or a couple of people that I looked at and I said, please God, give me 10% of them just so I can live it.
God gave you a lot more.
Thank you. That's something that I remember so, so clearly praying that I could have a little bit of that. And just knowing that somebody else had it was enough for me to make the decision. And for my personality, I'm either 0 or 100%. I don't know how to do anything halfway. So when I finally, you know, flipped the switch to say, yes, I'm going to do this, I went, you know, Mach 10.
Full on.
I went full speed as fast as I possibly could. And I organized my life with this one goal in mind. It worked out a lot better than I could have ever imagined. And I feel extraordinarily blessed to get to live this life. And I think that's why I feel I have this responsibility now to share it, so that other people can see, hey, this life can be great.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I really am. Is there one myth about the trans community that you would like to debunk?
Oh, there's so many.
Or even a couple or a few. I don't mind.
I think the obvious one is that we're not women. I've been this my whole life. Anyone who's ever met me is going to say, this really is you. And I said, like, you have no idea how much this is me. When I actually started coming out, I blossomed in ways that I can never explain to somebody how it feels, how natural it feels to me. But I would say, before I talk about that one, there's this consensus that, you know, we're deviants, or that there's something wrong with us, and we're broken, and we have some mental illness. People who meet me in real life, they're like, you're so much more normal. Not that normal is a good word, but you're, you know, you have a job, you have kids, you have a great relationship with your friends, you're so much more, you know, I'm not this crazy person. I'm
human.
I'm just one person. I just happen to be trans, but I live a relatively normal-ish kind of life.
Right. And being trans is such a small part of who we really are as people.
Exactly. Actually, as a side note, I went to a party on Saturday. It was a birthday party with a friend. And everybody there, or most of the people there, knew that I was trans. And it never came up in discussion. I talked to one person quietly because she had asked me a question. But it was such an amazing experience where me being trans was just like a non-factor. It wasn't a good thing. It wasn't a bad thing. It was just a part of the fabric of who I am, just like a part of the fabric. I have all these other components of who I am. And it's just a piece of it. It was such a wonderful experience to see a whole bunch of people who are just totally, totally and utterly accepting. And just, it was such a fantastic way of finally feeling that, you know, it's done and I don't have to stress about it so much anymore. At the beginning, all you talk about is being trans. I remember talking to my friends and saying, you know what, I wish one day that we don't talk about me being trans anymore. It's just part of this piece of who I am, but it's not actually something that's so fantastic and so interesting. It's just, we go on with the rest of our lives.
Right. Do you think you've reached a point where you don't think about it as much?
Definitely. I'm at the stage with lots of friends where it's always there, but just like there's lots of other things that are always there. You know, we talk about more typical components of our life, and it's not really such a big piece anymore. It's now I live my life and I don't think about it even remotely as much as I did at the beginning.
Okay. Is there anything that you would like to share with everyone that I did not ask you about?
Sure. I would say I feel so incredibly blessed to be able to share my story. Most of my story I share on Instagram at almost.instant.victoria. I also have been, I started a YouTube video. I have a couple there just under Victoria Pereira. But I feel so blessed, and in some ways I feel like it's my responsibility to share my story. And really, I share the good, I share the bad. I'm always going to tell it like it is. And that was one thing I promised to myself when I started transitioning, is that I'd lived a lie for such a long time that now the idea of being a fake or a fraud or not living authentically, it leaves such a bad taste in my mouth that I can do nothing but be who I actually am. That is such an unbelievably freeing experience and freeing feeling, to finally not have secrets and to actually be who you really are. And that there's a freedom in there, and there's a peace that comes with that, that you just simply, you can't give that to somebody. They have to find it for themselves. And I feel that transitioning gave that to me.
Yes. Wow. That is amazing. Where can our listeners find you online?
Most of my work is on Instagram at almost.instant.victoria. I post there very regularly, usually once.
Yeah, that's why you're so big. I would always say to myself, gosh, I better get Victoria on the podcast before she becomes too big. She won't want to talk to me.
I find it so funny that like people say that to me, and I'm like, I'm not a celebrity. I'm just a normal girl. Like I never see myself that way. I'm just one of everybody else. I'm just like every other trans girl. I feel so lucky to share my story. And so I've done a couple of YouTube videos. I don't have TikTok. I don't have Twitter. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I'm not good enough at technology. I barely figured out Instagram. And as we started this podcast, I was having lots of technical difficulty just trying to figure out the audio.
We were. They'll never know, but yes, we were.
It was a lot.
Well, I guess the cat's out of the bag.
Exactly. That they can blame all of it on me, because I literally have no idea how to do any of this stuff. It was like almost a fluke that we figured it out in the end.
Oh, no, it's okay. My name's on the show, so I'm largely responsible for that.
It was really nice speaking with you. I really enjoyed this.
Likewise. Well, there's one last question I like to ask all of my guests. So,
shoot.
Yes, the pressure's on. Here it is. What does living authentically mean to you?
Huh, that's a great question. I'm totally ready for this. I feel like it's actually being introspective and finally listening to yourself with the ability of taking out the external noise. And that external noise can be the media, it can be friends, it can be family, it can be your social, it can be your upbringing, it can be all these things that you're told and guided on how you're supposed to be. And living authentically is really you listening finally to yourself. And that is a terrifying thing. When I started transitioning, I remember I used the analogy of like driving a car. I'd spent 42 years of my life as the passenger in my car of life. And then finally I took the steering wheel and I wanted to drive, but I didn't know how to drive. So I kept on hitting stop signs and I kept on driving on the wrong side of the road. And I tried a whole bunch of things and they didn't work or they weren't me. Over time, I would keep on trying things and seeing if it was me. And little by little, I started finding myself and really listening to who I was. And some things came really naturally and some things required some work, but it was a lot of trial and error. And it was a lot of just really being introspective and really listening to myself with self-reflection. It's a lot of work, but it is so incredibly worthwhile to live this way and to live your truth.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're living your truth. I think more people should follow suit.
Trans or not, I think that it's such
trans or cis.
Exactly. You know, living your
non-binary. Exactly.
Whoever it is, whatever your truth is, you know, I feel that the world would be a lot better place if people actually were who they actually were and not trying to be something that we're told or what we're supposed to be.
Absolutely. All right. So for the last part of our show, it's February. I don't know if you are aware that February is Black History Month here in America.
Yes, it is. Yes, same in Toronto, in Canada.
Okay, wonderful. All right. So for the last part of the show, since it is February, which is Black History Month, I would like to give mention to Lisa Galopter, who was born in 1971. She is a computer scientist who served as chief digital officer for the U.S. Department of Education, and she was involved with the advent of Shockwave, which is a technology that started web animation. She also played a major role in the emergence of online video and served on the senior management team at Hulu. So if you ever enjoyed an animated gift on the web, you can thank Lisa Galopter for making this possible for all of us. Happy Black History Month, everyone.
Happy Black History Month, everybody.
Oh, thank you. So, Victoria, I'd like to thank you for coming on to the show. It really means a lot to us to have you on. And I know it took a while for me to get you on because late last year I was going through the process of moving and, you know, life got a little busy, but I kept telling you, I'd like to have you on the show.
I really enjoyed myself. I really loved it. It was such a great experience for me as well.
All right, so that is our show. Thank you for tuning in. Our time is now. Let's change the world. And that is my sign off. So you were a poli-sci major?
Yes.
Okay, that's very nice. Do you work in that industry or?
Right now, I am a residential appraiser, so I work for the banks. Technically, I'm self-employed, but
I'm sorry to cut you off. Was that your cell phone?
It was. I just turned it off.
Okay, thank you. Could we redo that part?
Sure.
And you can say where you're from, too.
Sure.
Because you're Canadian, right?
Yes.
Nice. All right, we can start up again.
Okay. So my answer?
Yeah, you could just start before your phone dinged.
Okay.
That's all right.
That's excellent.
That's okay.